gardening tips on Basingstoke Community Radio with the garden editor, Claire.
It's a Tuesday morning and it means one thing for a Tuesday morning. It's garden editor time with Claire, and Claire's joining us on the telephone today. You all right, Claire?
Good morning, Dave. Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm all right. Thanks for joining us again today.
That's okay. Can you hear me down the line all right?
Yeah, we can hear you fine. Well, I can hear you all right. So I'm assuming everyone else can hear you. So yeah, we can turn up a little bit. You had a good week?
Yeah, it's not been bad. I mean, it's been a bit wet in times, hasn't it? We're heading for, I think, one of the wettest years ever. Certainly one of the warmest on record. So again, lots of climate records being broken and weather records being broken. So a few days of doing things in the rain and a couple of days of doing things in the sun. So, you know, pretty standard for November. How about you?
Well, at least you're getting wet and drying out, you know, in situations. That's quite good, isn't it? I suppose.
Yeah. It's not constant every single day, which is nice. Yeah.
Could be worse. Could be snow. That's next, isn't it?
Or we must do. We'll do a program about snow. Let's make sure we do book to
pencil,
do one.
Yeah, pencil that in snow then. Pencil in snow, because I don't think we're far away from it. Do you reckon we're getting any this year?
Well, we're definitely, the nighttime temperatures are starting to really drop.
Oh, tell me, yeah.
And that really makes a difference to if there is precipitation and if it is from the north. I mean, I'm not a weather meteorologist or anything like that, but that's the kind of thing that if you do get snow, then it is more likely to lay. But remember, the soil temperature lags a good while behind the air temperature because it's all warmed up over the summer. So it will still be cooling down. Not yet frozen. We've had one or two little frosts, but nothing major yet. But let's see what the next couple of weeks bring.
Absolutely.
We're getting to the shorter days of the year, aren't we? So, yeah.
Log burner evening time, isn't it?
Oh, do you know, it's that smell of wood smoke when you're out and about and you smell a bonfire. And I know it, you know, it does have a carbon impact because we are burning carbon, but, you know, it's a much more sustainable way than lots of other fossil fuels.
That's right.
And that smell of a nice log burner is a really lovely smell, isn't it?
Yeah, well, unless you smoke the house out.
Yeah, let's not talk about that.
Right, what are we talking about today then, Claire?
So I thought we would do something a bit of a kind of a theme.
Okay.
Something I'm picking up with a fair few clients and also driving around Basingstoke, as I do, we have lots of new homes being built in Basingstoke the area. And they're great to welcome new people or to give existing people who live in the area their first home. But quite often they can be quite challenging from a gardening perspective. So I thought what we could do is do a kind of a run through all about the pitfalls, the pros and cons of what to do if you move into a new build and you want to improve your garden.
Yeah, okay then. I'll leave it entirely up to you and I will jump in when I need to.
Yeah, and there might be a test. I might do a little test to see if you're really
listening.
Yeah.
I must keep my headphones on then. Okay, got it. All right.
I can't prod you in the studio.
No, you can't, no. Like not with that long bamboo stick you normally use.
all my secateurs. So the great thing about new builds in lots of ways is quite often they are a blank canvas in terms of a garden. Sometimes show homes may have a garden which is planted up, but more often than not, we tend to see new build homes having a quite blank garden. It might have a small patio. It might have, you know, useful things like taps for hoses and stuff like that. But more often than not, it's a patio with turf laid down, you know, fairly quickly, fairly readily, because that, you know, helps the garden and the house look finished so the developers can sell it. A blank canvas can be a very great advantage, but it can be really hard work to know what to do and where to start. And the temptation is to think, oh, am I feeling overlooked by all the other houses that are coming up or flats being built around me? What should I do about screening and like making my garden feel more enclosed and private? What do I do about the turf and the patio? So I thought we could kind of run through a few things to think about before you start spending money on buying plants, which is, you know, I love buying plants, but, you know, sometimes that can waste our money if we don't do the bit of a thinking beforehand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So quick quiz. By planning law, how high can you have your hedges and fences in a house in England in general?
Are you asking me? I reckon 6 foot.
A little bit higher. Not much, but a little bit higher.
6 foot five.
Yeah, pretty much spot on. So two meters is the height under which you generally don't require planning permission, and you don't generally get into trouble for having things like hedges and fences, and that includes trellises. So if you think, first things first, oh, I don't like all these houses around me, I'm going to put up a really tall fence around my house so no one could overlook me, you're likely to get into trouble, either with the planning authorities or with your neighbours raising complaints. So generally speaking, there are all different rules in different parts of England and around the world for those listening in from other countries, but it tends to be about 2 metres. And most fence panels tend to be about 6 metres. So you can put a trellis or put something above it. But if you're putting a hedge in or putting anything on top of your fence, you do have to be aware of that 2 metre restriction.
Mm. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, it's one which takes people by surprise. Do you remember Leylandii, those really fast growing trees?
Mm-mm, no, of course I don't.
No.
Why would I know that?
Well, they caused a huge amount of problems in the 80s and 90s because they were planted, really fast growing, grew up, and it basically stole people's lights and access to and enjoyment of their gardens.
Oh, right.
So these new rules have been brought in to basically make sure that what you do in your garden doesn't negatively impact your neighbour's enjoyment of their space.
Right.
So that's why.
Okay.
Doesn't mean to say you can't plant things to give a bit of a screen, so long as they're not a hedge. An evergreen hedge. So you could have something which loses its leaves in winter, like beech trees are quite often used for that. Or you could have very tall grasses which grow up and kind of break up the area. Or you can have climbers up to trellis for up to 2 metres. And all those type of things can help break up the view that you might have otherwise of a very blank fence or wall, and then seeing beyond to your neighbours. So that's first thing first, which is sort out your boundaries. Think about what you might want to screen and how you might want to do it.
One
way of doing it is doing what we call a bit of a trick of the eye. So if you have if you're facing a blank wall in front of you, it's very tempting to put things at the far end of your garden to screen it. Kind of up against your own boundary edge. But you can break up that view really effectively and probably far cheaper by, for example, planting a tree in the middle of your lawn, because then you've got the tree taking your eye towards the tree away from the wall. It will break it up, and over time the tree will fill up and occupy the space. But it doesn't mean that you're trying to put things right at the far edge of your garden. So it tends to be that your soil is likely to be easier to work.
All right.
You're likely to have more enjoyment of it. So don't always think for screening that you have to do things right up against your boundaries.
Right, okay. I'll remember that when I'm going to plant a tree.
Yeah, absolutely. Second thing, patios.
Yeah.
You know, patios quite often come with new builds. Quite often we see like French doors or French windows, where they open out and it's from the kind of kitchen or the dining room. So quick test for you. Do you think indoor and outdoor dining spaces are the same size? Do you think indoor spaces are larger, or do you think outdoor spaces are larger?
Well, that's a bit, I don't know, that's a bit of an open-ended question, really, because it depends how big you make it, doesn't it, really? Because in our house, our decking is larger than our dining room.
Yeah, well, that is a good example. So what quite often happens in a new build is the patio can often be quite small, and that's because the builders will look at a dining space indoors and pretty much do the same size outside.
Oh, okay.
But in fact, and you might have found this when you did your decking, people move differently outside when you're sitting around a table. We actually occupy much more space. We don't sit in right up to the table so much. We kind of push our chairs back. Mm. There might be kids or pets running around behind ourselves. So my advice always is to look at the size of your patio and think really hard. Is that the biggest, you know, is that the space that you need for seating? It doesn't necessarily mean you have to pave over the whole of your garden. There's all sorts of sustainable options you can do. But have a think first off if you think that's going to be big enough, because that kind of landscaping is worth doing towards the start of your new garden, rather than doing all the planting, all the nice fun stuff, and then thinking, oh, actually, we're trying to cramp around and do a barbecue on 6 slabs of paving, and this isn't really working for us.
No. I mean, when you initially put it down and put your table and chairs on it, it all looks, oh, that's all right. But then the chairs are up against the table, aren't they, at that point?
Exactly. So when people do those kind of views from above and they look at the table and chairs inside in the sitting room, the dining room or sitting room, and they just kind of cut and paste that and put that outside, it looks fine. But it's worth literally, you know, dragging a chair or table outside and really, you know, acting out how it would be like if you were, you know, having a proper, you know, time with friends and family, maybe a barbecue in the corner, and just thinking, okay, what do we really, really need? What's going to actually make this feel not cramped and not like we're all, you know, up against each other, but actually relaxed and enjoyed during our space.
Yeah, no, that's a good idea. Yeah, I didn't think of it like that.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm here to do. And if people have got examples of those things, please, please do share. Quite often you might find your landscapers might have laid a path somewhere, moved to a back door. So you can always lift those pavings and put them and add them to your patio. So you don't necessarily need to spend a lot of money doing that type of stuff.
And that way it will match, won't it?
Exactly.
Because normally the contractors would have bought a job lot of really obscure coloured paving slabs you can't get anywhere.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And it just keeps the cost down and it means that you're not kind of actually covering over more. So you're still helping biodiversity, but just making it far more usable for your lifestyle rather than having a path to nowhere or something like that, which quite often we see. So those are two things. Then let's talk about turf and lawns. And I know we've talked about turfs and lawns before in the past. I think it's worth thinking what happens in a new build. As you've probably gathered, what happens is the landscapers come in and get a job lot of turf, and they will put pretty much the same turf down in all of the gardens.
Yeah.
And quite often, these have been basically building sites for many weeks or months or sometimes even years.
Yeah, so it's just flung on something, isn't it? It's not...
Exactly. So there might well have been tractors or kind of diggers or machinery going over, compacting it. Mm-hmm. And then the developers should put topsoil on top of that and then layer turf on top of that. And sometimes in some good developments I've seen, I have dug in and you can see it's actually quite deep and it's quite good. In other places, you're literally on nothing. My house, when I bought it and when I moved in, you know, there was barely anything beneath the lawn. So unsurprisingly, the lawn didn't really thrive. There was no nutrition for it. There was nothing for it to get down into. Mm. And quite often these lawns are put out like carpets. So they're covered the whole area. You might have a kind of a dark and shady corner by a shed or by a garage. They'll still put the lawn down there. But because it's designed to be in full sun, that lawn is not likely to thrive. It's likely to go patchy and get really muddy, or it might get sodden. So again, this is about thinking what actually is underneath your ground, what is under the soil. If you want to keep all the areas turf, that's great, but you might need to overseed with some seed mix for shadier areas if you want to keep that, or you might need to introduce some kind of feed as well if it's on very, very poor soil. But quite often people don't want the whole garden turf. They want some flowers or they want some colour. And there they might think, oh, what should I do? Should I do raised beds around the sides? Or what can I do? You know, I'm basically builder's rubble here. What's going to be the best way of getting, you know, a nice flowery border looking, or growing veg or fruit or things like that? So some people do like doing things called raised beds, where you make kind of boxes either up against the fences or in the lawn area itself, where you basically build flower and fruit and veg beds, possibly surrounded by sleepers or wood, or sometimes surrounded by steel. And there's pros and cons of these. They are brilliant because it means you are building up the soil levels and you can just put them on the lawn, on your turf, put the sleepers on top, put on some more soil, some more organic matter. Bob's your uncle. It doesn't matter what's underneath in the builder's rubble because you've created a new planting pocket.
Yeah.
You've just built up the layers. So it's very popular for good reason. There are some downsides, though. It can be quite expensive. You've just bought a new house. Every penny counts. And landscaping of like building sleepers and raised beds all around your borders can actually add up to quite a lot of money. And it can be a lot to then get the drought level right, because as raised beds, they will tend to dry out quicker. So if you are in a very hot and sunny garden and you want to grow fruit and veg, for example, you might have to spend a lot of time and money watering that place. Equally, they're very good for accessibility. So if you are have different mobility needs, if you're in a wheelchair, they're a great way of being able to garden at your level rather than having to bend down or things like that. So not all bad, not all good. Pros and cons. If you do build them, the worst thing to do is to build them too narrowly. And I do see this a lot in gardens. If they're very narrow, like only 60 centimetres wide, there's not a lot of plants you can grow in that narrow a space. And sometimes I rather rudely call them death boxes for plants because they just cook. You know, it's really narrow. It's really hot.
Yeah.
Everything gets dried and you end up feeling sad and just end up looking at these kind of wooden boxes you've paid a lot of money for. So if you do go for them nice and deep and big. If that sounds like too much money and you don't mind a bit of work, you can just create borders either by leaving the turf in place and putting some cardboard on top. The cardboard, you then pile on top of the cardboard some topsoil and some compost. The cardboard rots down over time, but it kills the turf underneath it. But you keep all the goodness in the soil, and then come spring, you can ready to plant in it, and you can make those borders as big or as little as you want. Again, it does mean that you are likely to be bending down and it doesn't need some physical labour, so it's absolutely not for everyone. It does tend to be cheaper and easier to kind of do yourself than building raised beds.
You've got a bit of a cough there.
I have, you know, it's the end of the season and I've, yeah. You know, Busy work, and I've been talking too much as well, so I do apologise to Sam. But I think so that's something you can do, and that helps as well with your turf, because if you've got lots of turf which isn't thriving, you can always just turn it over and put it into your beds, and it will rot down. And the more you look after the soil, particularly in a new build garden, the more it will pay you. So spending a bit of money on some good organic matter, so compost or rotted horse manure, not the smelly stuff, but the stuff full of lovely wiggly worms, really can help improve all of your soil and help all of your plants to thrive, rather than just thinking, right, we must get plants in the ground straight away.
Yeah, because that's what the developers do, didn't they? They make your garden, they landscape it, they do it quickly, and they do it so it looks nice when you move in.
Exactly, and freshly laid turf looks beautiful, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But it's thinking, this is your house, maybe it's your forever home or your first house and you've saved, and then, you know, come 6 months later, you don't want to be looking at something which is just going to make you feel sad, even worse, think, okay, I can't grow turf here, so maybe I should put an artificial grass down. So the more you can do to look after the soil underneath that, so get your spade out or borrow a spade, have a bit of a dig underneath the lawn and see how deep the topsoil is. Do be careful for things like services, so electricity or gas cables or water cables, because again, in new build houses, you should be given a map showing where all your services are in the garden, so you know not to, you know, put your spade through the electrics or whatever it is running.
Or sewer line, isn't it? Yeah, sorry, that's the last thing you want,
Yeah, sewer, or I think some people have done a gas line in the past, and, you know, those type of things are really expensive, and you don't want to start your new life in your new house dealing with something.
You don't
want to
make a claim on your house insurance 2 or 3 days after you've moved in, do you?
No, that would definitely be suboptimal. But if you've got about a spade depth, I would say that's enough to start to think about planting, particularly if you pile on a bit more organic matter. If it's shallower than that, then I think you should be looking more at raised beds and or just adding in lots more organic matter before you even begin to think about planting. Alternatively, plant lots of things in containers around your patio and just take some time, get yourself settled in your house, spend, you know, a good couple of months seeing where the sun shines and where it doesn't, where it might be windy, where there might be more sounds that you want to hide, and kind of getting to know your garden before thinking, right, I must kind of complete my garden in the first couple of weeks and months of living. It does take time, but it's not something that, you know, no one ever had an emergency because they didn't have a shrub in their garden.
No.
You know, so I say that.
I suppose it's like moving into not a brand new house, but I suppose it's like moving into a new home that's new to you. And then rather than painting all the rooms and everything in one go, live in it for a little while and then see what you want to do and where you want to put stuff. Yeah.
Exactly. The same. So if you're moving into a house with an existing garden, that comes with different challenges because you might have, you know, weeds or things you don't know, and you might feel a bit more beholden. But I say, if you're moving into a new build, take a photo at 12 o'clock on the first of the month, just from your back window, And that will show you where the sun is, and do that once a month. And that will tell you what, where you get the sun, where you get the shade. It will help you work out, okay, well, that's a nice spot for some morning coffee, or that's where I'd really want a barbecue for the evening. Or, okay, if I have children, that's where we could put like a swing or a play area, or, you know, that's where I could hide the bins. So kind of thinking about it, not just the immediacy, but thinking for the long term in real life. You know, you need an outdoor power point and plugs for, you know, lights, or an electric car if you've got a car that you want to plug in. So things like that. The other one which always gets me is washing lines. Do you dry your clothes outside ever?
Yeah, we've got a washing line.
Yeah, because that's something, again, developers don't think of those things. No. But, you know, so you can either have a rotary one, which I find that you spend a lot of your life looking at a rotary line in the back of your garden.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of the retractable ones that you can put from one side to the other.
That's what we got.
And that means that when it's working, it's working. And when it's not, you're not looking at it.
That's right. Yeah.
You're not looking at something covered in a cover flapping around and making you think, oh, I can't wait for spring, or I can't wait for summer, or will this rain in November never end? So, again, those are the kind of things it's worth doing before you do the planting, but just kind of getting the basics right. I would always say, what else would I say? Water butts, wouldn't I?
Yeah.
Get your water butt, maybe a composter or something like that. Just the boring, it's like the basics of a kitchen before you go and, I don't know, buy a really fancy wok. You want to make sure you got your cutlery.
Yeah, something to eat it with.
Exactly.
Well, that's all good advice. Have you got anything else you want to add? Because you've spoken a hell of a lot as well this morning. Again, I can't get a word in edgeways.
I know, but I did give you some questions. You did stay awake.
Yeah. I was alert.
Yeah, so patios, turfs, trees, fences and things like that.
Right.
But, you know, I'm always around if people need help and you're kind of feeling overwhelmed. It's very easy to feel overwhelmed. Just drop me a line.
Yeah, perfect. Right, you're not back next week, but you are the week after.
Yes, absolutely. I think we're almost near getting into December-ish
time. Scary, isn't it? Yeah.
Wow.
What song are you going to pick today then?
So today I thought I would do a song about our houses and what they mean to us. And I think no one really said this better than Madness, Our House. So that is my track of the week.
Thank you very much for that. And we're going to play that after the ads. And I'm going to say thank you very much for joining us today. And we'll look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks.
You're so welcome, Dave. Have a good week.
Thanks, Claire. All the best. Bye.
Gardening tips on Basingstoke Community Radio.